Norway, as a sovereign nation, has from time to time in its history had the misfortune of being at war. We're not alone in this. Every country in the world goes through this, apart from, you know, places like the Seychelles or the islands of Vanuatu or, I don't know, the Vatican City. Standout conflicts for Norway might include the Battle of Havesfjord in the year 872, which created our first king. Stamford Bridge in England in 1066, which pretty much put an end to the Vikings. And then there were a bunch of disputes with our neighbours, Sweden, Denmark and Finland, which lasted for what probably felt like 1,000 years for all the countries concerned. In the 20th century, even when we pulled that old trick of being neutral, we still suffered losses in the First World War and got ourselves occupied in the Second. In modern-day Norway, our military is dotted over the globe as part of an allied force fighting in a number of disputed territories, and although no one would characterise us as one of the big players in terms of military might, we nevertheless have some guns, and we have some people prepared to fire them, and we put about 1 and a bit % of our GDP into an army, an air force, and a navy. Alongside that, we also have military police who have authority over the force's personnel wherever they're stationed. On the whole, the MPs deal straightforwardly with most low-level stuff, but in complex cases like narcotics or serious violent crime, or when they've just reached a dead end, then they bring in the big guns. And by the big guns, I'm talking about Annika Strandhed of the Oslo Boat Patrol. Sorry, I had army drums in my head when I said that. I'm going to be late home tonight, Tor. Are you okay with whatever Grandma cooks you? I've told her you've gone off that mutton stew a little bit, but it's Fauracle feast day today, so there's a high chance she's going to make it anyway, because, well, it's the national dish, and she likes it when we celebrate our heritage. So try and be polite about it, and we'll have kebabs at the weekend. Don't worry about leaving me leftovers. I'm hoping to eat with the soldiers. I'm helping the army today. How about that? I'm going to a training base. I might see a tank. I'll take a picture of one if you like. Okay, nice talking to you. Practicing for a war can feel as complex as the real thing. You have to pick a bit of the country which resembles the places where you think future battles might happen. You have to bring a decent amount of men and equipment over, some of which will be from other countries, as it's rare to carry out exercises on your own these days. And some of those people won't speak your language or you theirs, so you have to work out a way of communicating with them. Chances are the place you've chosen to do the operation has a challenging environment, as it's likely the real battle will be in one of those. And even if it isn't, then it's good to plan for the worst. Someone has to work out the logistics for accommodating and storing all this stuff and people. Someone has to work out how to make the operation real enough so that meaningful learning takes place, but not so real that soldiers get injured, and not too safe that it just feels like fun and games in the woods. And then there are the unexpected knock-on social effects too. There was a training exercise in Iceland once, and when it had finished, the soldiers drank all the beer in the country. Literally, all of it. And so I had a lot of respect for the team that had put together a military exercise in the large Kvikneskogen forest near the Eidsfjellet mountain in order to replicate a ground offensive they might experience in, say, Siberia. Although they didn't tell me what country they were training for, but it was clearly somewhere like Siberia and not, for example, Hawaii. What they did tell me, however, was that once the operation was over, one of their sergeants had been discovered in the River Tuna, and they knew it hadn't been an accident because he'd had his throat slit. And that wasn't one of the things they were practicing.
The man is in his early 50s and in the same regular camouflage that all the troops have been wearing on this operation. He was seen in the river by the crew of an amphibian assault vehicle that was about to enter the water, and he was dragged to dry land, which is where he has stayed since the crew called it in. At first it wasn't clear which part of the combined NATO forces he was part of, but he has since been identified as Sergeant Edgars Ozols from Riga, a non-commissioned officer with the Latvian army. There is a cut across his throat, which has clearly severed his windpipe and is the most likely cause of death. It's possible that this injury was done in the water, as there is no obvious sign of blood on the ground, apart from a small amount that has leaked out while he's been lying here. The autopsy will get on with confirming this as soon as he's released. There are no obvious signs of any other injuries. The army are removing themselves from the scene, and I've got a small forensics team looking at the site, although they don't seem optimistic of finding anything, including the weapon that killed him.
Sergeant Ozols was considered to be an old school soldier. He enlisted at 16 and then slowly worked his way through the ranks. He was single. His life was the army. He was patriotic, but then so was everyone in the Latvian army, and no one really seemed to have strong feelings about him either way. Everyone I spoke to had this studied blandness in their answers. This may have been a result of everything going through a translator, or it might have been just how the army normally talks, but I've never experienced a group of people offer so little opinion about a colleague's personality, or why someone might want them dead. It was only a rather winningly open, or perhaps naive, private who remarked that Sergeant Ozols had been heard having a loud dispute with someone in the forest a couple of days before, but hadn't shared any details, just said he'd put everything in his report once the training exercise was over. Something that someone had gone to some lengths to stop him doing.
So I know about wild moose and elks, but I also believe that there are quite a lot of wolves in Norway, and also bears. Am I right about that? Did you see any bears during your military operation? I expect they kept away. I know that Svalbard has got polar bears. I saw one, actually, when I was doing a case in Longyearbyen. At least I think it was a polar bear. Might have been a pile of snow. I was quite tired at the time. I had to be accompanied by someone with a shotgun in case I got into difficulties, which is something I don't have to worry about when I've got an officer from the army with me. Got to say, that's reassuring. So I was hearing that the river Tuna actually has its origin in the mountain and that it's glacial water, so quite clean to drink with... God, what? Stay down! Are you hit? This is the police! Whoever you are, put down your weapon!
Many of the advances in civilian medicine are down to the innovations developed by medics on the battlefield. Tourniquets were used as early as the 4th century when they were referred to in Alexander the Great's campaigns. Ether was used as an early anaesthetic during the Crimean War. A way of transporting blood was developed during the Spanish Civil War, and a kind of adhesive to stop bleeding in Vietnam became an early version of superglue. At one time, and perhaps even now, it was said that a person who suffered a multiple trauma near a field hospital in a war zone stood a better chance of survival and had access to greater expertise than if they had been knocked over by a bus in a city. And it wasn't just the surgeons that helped save lives. The Venerable Order of St. John set up initiatives which meant that for the first time in the 19th century, soldiers themselves had basic first aid training in case there was a delay getting a medic out to a remote location. And I was glad about that because whoever was shooting at us kept doing it, and at some point, one of the bullets hit me.
I don't think, I don't know, but I don't think it's hit anything major, or else I'd be... Okay, look, you've called it in, and so I'll press down on this dressing while you keep shooting back at him. I'm fine where I am. I've got a boy to look after at home, and so it's impossible that anything should happen to me. I won't let it. Make sure that whoever tells him I've been hurt does it with lots of reassurance in their voice. Some of you army lot can be a bit... Oh, God.
I heard the helicopter, but I didn't hear it land, nor was I aware of how I got put into it and flown away and put onto an operating table. Sergeant Ozol's report, had he been able to write it, would have said that the forest in which the military operation was taking place hadn't been as effectively swept for civilians as they'd believed, and someone, a survivalist, had managed to avoid the infrared and had put into action a long-thought-out plan when the thing that he always thought would one day happen did actually happen. That a foreign force was invading Norway. He didn't recognise the language spoken by Sergeant Ozols, despite the NATO credentials, who'd given him firm indications that he should leave the forest immediately. He gave the soldier the impression he was complying with his request, but he doubled back. And then when Ozols returned the following day to do a final sweep of the area, he killed him with the knife that he used to skin rabbits and threw him in the water. Then he hunkered down with his emergency rations and ammunition and a hat with twigs in it and watched the manoeuvres. He didn't feel he was able to tackle the amphibious attack vehicles, and so he waited for the chance to pick off individuals who strayed into his vicinity. He apparently said he was one of a number of defenders of the nation hidden in forests all over the country, which is going to make country walks a lot more stressful.
Don't be worried about the tubes and machines, Tor. They're just checking me over and giving me food and water because I'm not ready to sit up and eat quite yet. If you like, you can shove some of the mutton stew that your granny made in the drip bags, and I can celebrate Foracle Feast Day after all. How about that? I've decided it's a nice way to celebrate Norway, not a weird way. Don't be sad. Little lad, I look a lot worse than I am, and probably not as bad as during some of the hangovers I've had. Hey, if you look over there on the chair, you can find my phone where I've taken a picture of me next to an infantry mobility vehicle. Although you have to promise me that if you want to join the army, you'll talk to me about it first, will you? I've discovered one or two downsides. Mummy's got to sleep now. I love you. It's going to be fine. I promise.